Hey, it's Canzano. I appreciate you making this podcast part of your day. Make sure you subscribe if you want more and leave us some feedback. Away we go.
Initialize sequence.
Welcome to The Baldcast, a production of John Canzano's Bald-Faced Truth.
EFFT. Now, live from Killer Burger in West Lynn, here's John Canzano with The Bald-Faced Truth, presented by High Caliber Millwrights.
Well, I'm broadcasting from the mean streets of West Lynn today here at Killer Burger at Cascade Summit. Jackson Shellstad, West Lynn kid, joining us from the road. You're in Pittsburgh. Set the scene for us in Pittsburgh. What's the hotel like? What's the scene like?
Yes, sir. It's nice out here. It's my first time, so a little different than what I'm used to, especially on the West Coast. It's kind of like a blue-collar East Coast city. But hotel's really nice. It's in a good area. So, I mean, I'm liking it. The weather's not too bad either.
I've been there. It reminded me a little bit of downtown Portland when I was there a few years ago. Did you get a chance to see the bridges and the river that runs through downtown and all that? Or have you been mostly basketball?
I haven't seen any of the bridges or the river. But, I mean, there is a lot of buildings. So, I mean, it's kind of similar to Portland, like. There's more trees than I thought out here, for sure.
There you go. Give us an idea. You know, guys had a practice earlier today. Nobody in the gym, but you're getting a workout in. How are you guys feeling and health-wise, and how do your legs feel?
We're feeling good. I mean, we got eight players who are healthy right now, and we got off a long flight yesterday and had a light practice last night. And then we had a practice earlier this morning, trying to get ready, getting a lot of shots up. And we're just really excited for this opportunity.
I was there in Vegas. It was incredible to see that Arizona game especially, and then the championship game. But you were there. You were in that locker room. You were out on the court. When Infali Dante goes out in the Arizona game, you know, you guys aren't deep enough to kind of make up for that. But you did a nice job of keeping that to 10 at half. And I want to know what that was like to go into the locker room at halftime, that Arizona game, if you can think back, just sort of the mood in that locker room. And because you guys came out in the second half and just kicked ass.
Yeah, I mean, honestly, we didn't think we were having a great half at all in the first half. So, and we were only down by 10, which the last two times we played, and we've been down by more. So, I mean, just coming out and being aggressive and being, you know, the first team to kind of punch them in the mouth was big for us. And, you know, we were getting out rebounded and some little small things that we wanted to make a huge goal in the second half, just to win those things. And we did that. We started hitting some big shots down the stretch and, you know, just came out with the W.
What is Dante like? I mean, we get to see him play, but you ride buses with him and work out with him. You've been around him now. What is he like as a teammate?
Oh, I mean, he's like a big kid. Like he's a goofy guy, and we all love it. I mean, he's always smiling and joking around. I mean, his energy and the vibe is just always amazing with him. Like he always brings us in the positive way. And I mean, I love to be around him. And I mean, I think everybody would say the same thing.
It was amazing to watch you guys in person on press row, but, you know, you hit some big shots in that championship game and also the Arizona game, the semifinal game, and, you know, it feels like you've been at Oregon for a while, and then I look up and I'm like, he's still a freshman. Like, what has it been like for you? How comfortable are you? And, you know, how, at this point of the season, you feel like maybe a different player than you were earlier in the year?
Yeah, I mean, for sure. I think I started to feel more comfortable out there. Just because, I mean, that freshman stage kind of, I'm still a freshman, but I've played a lot of games and been through ups and downs and gone through tough games, you know, good games. So it's like I'm starting to feel like it's kind of a different mindset now coming out. I feel more confident. And, I mean, that's just my coaches and teammates as well who kind of let me play with that confidence and tell me to play my game. But right now, I think I'm playing with definitely more confidence than I was earlier in the season.
Jackson Shellstead, University of Oregon guard, is our guest. I'm curious about your approach for tournament games. Do you watch film on your own? What are you looking for if you're looking at film? Are there certain tendencies you're looking at, or are you looking at it more from a defensive standpoint? Give us an idea of the preparation.
We always watch film as a team a lot before the game, whoever we play, and then I like to watch some on my own as well. But just really watching tendencies of players on the other team a lot, like what they like to do offensively, defensively. But I mean, really just, I think tendencies on the players on the other team are big, just knowing, you know, who wants to go left, who's the shooters, like who's going to go for rebounds, that kind of thing. Just so, I mean, it makes you more prepared for the matchup.
And do you get individual film as well? Like, I know the football guys will get like iPads and they can watch individual plays. And do you get, does it become that kind of exercise, or is it more of a group thing?
I mean, it's really, if you want to do it, like, if you want to watch individual film, you got all the film you want on our huddle, on our team app. So, but we watch film as a team when we go to watch film.
Jackson, you got Jermaine Cousinard, who, you know, was at South Carolina. He knows some of these guys. Is that a good resource to have a guy like that who is familiar with maybe some of their players?
Yeah, I mean, he went to South Carolina and he does know some of the guys. I actually think he didn't play with many of them that are on the team now, but he still has a clue of and knows some of the guys. But he's pumped up to play against his old school, and I think, you know, he's going to come out with great energy.
What do you guys see when you look at film of South Carolina as you watch them?
They play really good defensively, and then they're really athletic. They can get downhill. They shoot a lot of threes, and they crush the boards hard, so we're going to have to box out and defend and, you know, just come ready to play hard.
You've played a ton of basketball, a ton of high school basketball at a high level, and, of course, your club basketball, and you're in your first NCAA tournament. Do you know what to expect, or did you get a peek at it when you watched Peyton a little bit, or what, you know, what is your experience with the tournament?
Yeah, I mean, obviously, you know, like, I've been watching it every year. I think every basketball fan loves March Madness, and I did watch Peyton, and I went to a couple of his March Madness games, but it's just a lot different when you're out there playing than watching in the stands. So I've never really had that experience. I just had the Pac tournament experience, which was even different than the regular season for me, but I'm just super excited. And, you know, I think it's going to be a lot of fun.
I think it'll feel a lot like those Pac-12 games. That's what they reminded me of. I thought just the way you guys, the intensity, kind of the buzz inside the arena, it was just so much fun to see you guys. You mentioned only 8 healthy players. On one hand, you know you're going to get a bunch of minutes. You know you're going to have a bunch of rhythm. On the other hand, you know, you've got the potential here of 2 games in 3 days, you know, at each level. How do you guys manage that? How do you navigate that? How do you stay out of foul trouble? I mean, there's just a bunch of stuff that goes with that.
I mean, just been trying to take care of our bodies going into these games and hydrate, eat well, do all the little things. But, I mean, coming into these games, you know, it's one game at a time, so we're not looking ahead like, oh, we're going to play 2 games this week. And, you know, we got to win the first one, so we're going to give it our all that tomorrow during the game, and whatever happens. So we got to play 40 minutes and got to do it, but we just got to get the win.
You know, and I know that, you know, there's a lot of people in the state of Oregon, of course, Duck fans rooting for the team, but there are people in West Lynn that you've probably never met who have come up to me since that Pac-12 tournament and just said how proud they are to see another kid from West Lynn, you know, to out there on the court making a big difference. What does that mean to you when you, you know, you got little 8- and 9-year-old kids who are like, you know, they want to grow up and be Jackson Shellstead now?
I mean, that means everything to me. I mean, I love being from West Lynn and putting on a good rep for where I'm from. So I'm really glad that people are proud and they like to see what I'm doing, and, you know, I just want to be I like to make them happy, so hopefully we can keep it going.
Now, have you been to Killer Burger, where I'm broadcasting from today? Have you had a Killer Burger yet?
I actually haven't, but I heard it's really good, so I need to go this summer for sure.
Yeah, it's not far from that Starbucks you probably hung out at as a middle.
I know, and right by that Safeway.
Yeah, so there you go.
I know exactly where it is. Yes, sir.
Hey, I saw you're doing something.
I'll make my way there this summer.
Yeah, you got to get there. You're doing something with Settlemyer's jackets as well. I've seen it online. You know, there was a jacket that was like one of a kind Pac-12 jacket. There's some Oregon Ducks jackets that Settlemyer's has done with you. How did that come together for you?
You know, it's just a good opportunity for me to kind of incorporate something I like with NIL. Like, I love fashion, and they were making some really cool jackets, I noticed, and it was kind of based out of Portland. Settlemyer's is based out of Portland, so it's a cool connection with something close to home. And so we just started making jackets last year, my senior year of high school, and they make some really cool ones, like one-of-one jackets, and then they made a couple for my team that were really cool. So it's just a great opportunity for me to kind of put out something that I enjoy with fashion and jackets and that kind of thing. So it was a really cool deal.
Now, downtime-wise in Pittsburgh, you know, you have a workout, you got team meals, you probably have some meetings. How much downtime do you get? Do you have a roommate? Are you rooming with Mookie? Is that right?
Yeah, Mookie is my roommate. He's my roommate every trip. But we're 3 hours ahead. We finish our stuff in the morning, so we're just kind of chilling the rest of the day. We're going to watch film and eat dinner. But for the rest of the day, we're kind of just hanging out and getting mentally ready for the game tomorrow.
Can you play video games? Do you watch movies? Do you watch other basketball? How do you kind of fill that time?
Yeah, we watched both of the games last night, the playing games. We'll probably watch both tonight. Some guys bring video games. I know some of the teammates are playing, but I didn't bring my video stuff. But, I mean, just kind of hanging out, getting ready for the game, watching hoops as well.
All right. Well, you got South Carolina. We wish you the best. I know a lot of people will be watching and pulling for you guys and hoping for a second game in this tournament. Jackson, I appreciate you, man. Good luck to you, and we'll catch you down the road.
Thank you. I really appreciate you. Thank you.
And there he goes from the mean streets of West Lynn, Jackson Shellstad. Fantastic stuff. He was lights out in the Pac-12 tournament. He was like, and Nfali Dante was great. Of course, he's the centerpiece. He's a tentpole. But the play of Jackson Shellstad, particularly in the Arizona game, and certainly there were a couple of big shots in the first half in the championship game, really, I think, gives Oregon a layer of attack that, you know, keeps defenses honest. And certainly on a team that has a rotation that is not very deep, he says 8 deep. I sometimes feel it's more like 6. When Oregon's out there, I think that is the biggest challenge. It'll be the Ducks against South Carolina, 1 p.m. Pacific, tomorrow in Pittsburgh. And we'll have the games right here on 750 The Game, as we'll have March Madness wall-to-wall Thursday and Friday and through the weekend. You've got the Bald-Faced Truth. I'm broadcasting from Killer Burger in West Lynn. Stop by, give us a fist bump. The 5 at 5 is coming up at the hour. Pick up some swag. We've got some stickers and some giveaways. You got the BFT statewide. Leave it here.
What's going on with Shohei Ohtani? Fired his interpreter over an allegation of a massive theft. Dodgers interpreter for Shohei Ohtani was fired today after questions surrounding at least $4.5 million in wire transfers that were sent from Ohtani's bank account to a bookmaking operation. What are we talking about here, Stephen? Any more details on this? ESPN says that the slugger transferred funds to cover a gambling debt. It's Ipi Muzahara, who was a longtime friend and interpreted for Shohei, has apparently incurred the debts. There are some whispers out there about Muzahara being the fall guy. Internet conspiracy rumors saying he was the fall guy, others saying, no, this is definitely a case of misappropriated funds and troubles.
It's an interesting story, and I don't think we're close to having it being over. Jeff Passan put this out about an hour ago that Ohtani told ESPN that the funds had been transferred by Mizuhara for his gambling debt, and then ESPN actually had an interview with Mizuhara for 90 minutes on Tuesday night, and somehow Shohei Ohtani's team got ESPN to not publish that. And not publish the story. So there's some interesting shady things going on right now. No one really knows the truth, but it looks like Shohei Ohtani's team is kind of out in front of this and put the kibosh on the interview last night that never aired for ESPN.
Well, what would Mizuhara say that ESPN or, you know, that the Dodgers or Camp Ohtani would be uncomfortable with it, unless it's, hey, it wasn't all us. Shohei knew that I was doing this or was aware of it, but I don't know. Feels a little shady. Mizuhara says that he never bet on baseball. He's not quoting Pete Rose. He literally is saying that. Anna, what do you make of this?
I think whenever there's a lot of money floating around, there's bad things that can happen. And obviously, when you have someone like Shohei Ohtani who's making the kind of money that he's making, what is it? He signed a $700 million contract. Yeah. He's going to be a target for activities like this. So it doesn't really surprise me, sadly, but it's like he needed checks in place. You need checks in place to keep this kind of thing from happening.
So apparently Mizuhara got in debt with a poker game in San Diego.
That's a heck of a poker game.
And lost more than $1 million. And then asked Shohei to cover the debt. So there is literally a transfer of a seven-figure transfer going from Ohtani to the poker people, and they put loan as the subject. And Mizuhara says they had to put something in the memo, so they put loan in there. And by the way, the interpreter says that Shohei Ohtani, quote, did not trust him with the money and wanted to transfer it himself, because there is an easier way for Shohei not to make the direct payment to the poker people. I don't know Shohei Ohtani. I've never talked to him. We've never had him on the show. I've never been around him. I've just watched him. He does not strike me as a person who lacks discipline. But I don't know about the interpreter. The interpreter sounds like Pauly from like Rocky One, you know. So this is a problem.
So the interpreter makes $300,000 to $500,000 a year working as an interpreter for Ohtani.
Quite a range there, by the way.
Well, yeah.
Like he doesn't know. Yeah, it's 300. It's 500.
Somewhere between 300 and 500.
Do they flip a coin? It's three if it's heads. It's five if it's tails. Is that what we're talking about here?
So. Apparently, like, he claimed that Ohtani had agreed to pay off at least $4.5 million in gambling debt last year. $4.5 million.
So that's a really good friend. That's not a work relationship. That but here's another lesson. Okay, like I've had this conversation with a number of successful people that I've interviewed on the show over the years. They talk about your circle. And they talk about it as, you know, and I've heard, inspirational speakers talk about, you know, the people around you being your board of directors. And I've heard church pastors talk about it and say, look who Jesus surrounded himself with. Although there were some shady people in Jesus's inner circle that ultimately, backstabbed him. So, but I think it's another lesson for, like, how careful professional athletes have to be in their circle of trust. Who's in that inner circle?
Yeah.
Who is allowed into the sanctum, so to speak?
Absolutely. It comes to mind a conversation that I had with a member of a police union back when I was reporting. And I was always curious about, like, internal affairs within police departments and bureaus. Like, what is it that brings people down? Because you see people who have illustrious careers just completely flame out. And I remember that union rep telling me that there were three things that bring down someone in police work, and it was women, substances, and gambling. It was those three things, and I think you
could
apply
for
that
sluggers
to a lot of industries.
Well, I would say there's four in sports. The other is a bad back. So it's a bad back, a bad woman, gambling or substance abuses that bring people down. But I think Steven's right. I don't think this story's over. I think that anytime you have, anytime you have the high-profile athlete, the face of baseball, and you have gambling assigned with that in the interpreters, it's just another, if this turns out to be face value and not what internet conspiracy theorists want, like the same people who think that...
Middleton is dead?
I was just going to say that.
Yeah, that one?
The same people who are out there looking at the photos, poring over them with a magnifying glass, trying to figure out, you know, is Kate Middleton that short or is this photo doctored?
Are you talking about me again?
Those same people are saying that, you know, the interpreter is a fall guy. That these are Shohei's gambling debts.
Okay. So that's the insinuation.
We'll have to track this as that story develops.
And the thing is, it is show friendship because Shohei, remember, he deferred his contract, so he's only making $2 million this year. So giving up $3 million, $4 million for gambling debt, that's a lot of money. It's a lot of money to be giving your friend there.
So here's the timeline. Otani's rep goes on the record with ESPN saying Otani transferred $4.5 million himself to the bookmaker on behalf of the interpreter. And then spokesperson for Otani delivers the interpreter to ESPN for a statement. The interpreter says Otani never bet, felt bad for him, paid off his debts so he'd never do it again. And then spokesperson for Otani says that the interpreter is lying at the end of the 90-minute interview, right?
Yeah.
And then Otani's lawyers say this is a massive theft. And then the spokesperson says Otani had zero knowledge of his debt or his gambling habit in general. That's the summary. So feels like there was a deal in place, and then the interpreter got in there with ESPN and changed the story. To what effect, I don't know, because we don't have the video. Why would a news entity not air an interview?
Because they are not trusting that it's valid. Like, they got to pull it. In the same way that, you know, news agencies pulled the photo of Kate Middleton that everyone had a problem with because it turns out it was Photoshopped, the news agency ultimately is on the line for airing misinformation. So they have to protect their credibility and pull it if it's not valid or if there's questions about the validity.
I think we will see portions of that interview at some point. Like, ESPN will have to. Like, they can't just say, we have 90 minutes of footage, we don't trust it, we're backing off it. They have to at some point, don't you? Don't you think? Like, if you had 90 minutes of footage, like, and you are not going to air it because you say there's a potential credibility issue, wouldn't you then go through the process of, like, breaking it up?
And show people, like, this is the part that's in question?
Yeah, he said this.
I think they're just buying themselves some time, right?
But if Shohei's the face of MLB, can't MLB just put the, you know, say, you will not show this, ESPN?
Because ESPN is a media partner.
Yeah.
And it becomes very incestuous. So to speak.
There's that word again.
Second time we've used that word on this show. I mean, I just think it's one of these things, too, where we're going to get other people reporting on this subject that are going to break it down. But that's the timeline. Otani goes on record with ESPN saying he transferred the money to a bookmaker on behalf of the interpreter. Spokesperson then delivers the interpreter to ESPN to make a statement. Here he is. He's going to say how guilty he is. Spokesperson then says, Otani never bet. He felt bad for me. He paid off my debt, so I would never do it again. To this point, it's a happy, clean story. Then the spokesperson for Otani says, wait a minute. He's lying. He gave a 90-minute interview. He said some other things in there. And then Otani's lawyers say it was a theft. It was not a gift. It was a theft. And the spokesperson says Otani had no knowledge of the debt or gambling in general. There's something not right here.
If it turns out that there's some kind of shadiness on Otani's part, it's disappointing because up to this point, all that we've known about him is that he's been upheld in so many positive ways. Look at Otani and what a great teammate he is. Oh, look, he's married to this, you know, Japanese basketball player. Like, everything that's been said about him so far has been, like, excessively positive. So
and
it's
he
like,
looks
we can't,
good.
We can't have any heroes.
He looks so clean and nice in those Dodger uniforms. Like, he just looks crisp and
see-through
clean.
Pants and all,
He's the only Major League Baseball player who looks good in a uniform this season. Shohei Ohtani. But at the end of that, isn't the bigger problem, okay, like baseball's got a issue with hypocrisy in gambling. Okay?
Yes.
So all these sports leagues are saying nobody's allowed to gamble. We don't care regardless of sport. You cannot gamble. You cannot be in debt to bookmakers. You shouldn't be gambling. And, oh, by the way, look at our banner outside the outfield fence that says DraftKings and FanDuel and play yeah. Fantasy League. Everybody should play Fantasy League, but not our players. Right. They should not be playing Fantasy League.
Yeah.
Isn't the issue that kind of hypocrisy? Isn't that kind of muddying the waters?
But I don't, because I think it's an easy line for them to draw. It's like it's a clear boundary that players are expected to live up to. Is it really that hard to ask grown men not to gamble?
Yes.
To continue? Okay, well, then
oh, I thought you were asking me. I thought you were asking
me. Well, then asked and answered. Yeah.
No,
but logically speaking, I don't think it should be that hard of a rule to not follow, especially if you're making multi-million dollars as a baseball player.
Yeah, isn't that the key, that they're making that much money and that's their professional job? Like, you're risking so much, even if you're a minor leaguer. Like, you're risking so much if you're going to gamble on the sport you play. Like,
but
you should know
better. But what if they say don't gamble on the sport you play? You can gamble on basketball. You can bet the ponies. You can play Fantasy League in any other sport.
But it's a slippery slope.
But again, it's that self-discipline to say, hey, I can, you know, I can wager on anything but the sport I play. Because I kind of think that is an important distinction, is it not?
So let's say, John, for you as a professional radio host,
okay,
you have independent sports bar advertising on 750 The Game.
Okay.
Fantastic sports bar, great place to go to watch, you know, sports, right?
Sure.
But your rules, let's say your contract says you can't drink. Like, how hard is it for you to not drink?
Yeah, I wouldn't drink. But,
right.
But
like, it's not that hard. Just play by the rules.
But I don't think they're... I don't know. I think this whole thing with gambling is really problematic. It just... Okay, if the sports leagues weren't so gung-ho on generating revenue from them and promoting gaming, then I would get it. But a lot of what we watch in sports these days is promoting live in-game wagering. They're giving us shows on the... ESPN's programming is giving us shows that are saying, you know, here's our pick for the night. Here's a bad beat. You know, there is a lot of gaming-centric...
Right.
But isn't it also upping all their salaries and upping everyone's revenue?
Like, I'm not saying that Shohei Ohtani or any other baseball player should be betting on baseball. I'm asking, is it okay for them to have gambling, period, as long as it doesn't involve baseball? Can he bet on a college football game?
I think he should be able to. As long as it's not your sport, I think he should be able to. And I think the NFL's kind of put that down. Like, you know what? You can bet on things as long as you're not at at the team facility and it's not in the NFL, you're fine. Like, I kind of
walk across the street.
I kind of think that's okay though. Like,
don't do it at the team facility.
Don't drink at the bar. Just drink like a degenerate down the street. I don't know.
Just tailgate it. You know.
I don't know.
Jump through a table.
I just think it's kind of silly. But and then here's the other thing. Like, if you're Shohei Ohtani and you seriously are that, I can't decide if this is good or bad for him. In a weird way?
Yeah, does it make him cooler that he's gambling?
Well, no, but what if he's not gambling? What if he's just like, you know, Vince Vaughn on Entourage, and he's got Turtle in his inner circle driving him around, telling him what these Americans are saying, and out of the goodness of his heart, he's like, you lost $4.5 million, I got you. You know, doesn't that make Ohtani better?
Yeah, if that's the case.
Is there a difference between sports gambling and just, like, regular gambling? Like, MJ would play blackjack. Like, was that bad?
Yeah, he was gambling on the golf course.
Yeah. You know?
He was just smarter than Pete Rose.
There also wasn't all the cameras out there.
I interviewed Pete Rose on this show years and years ago. I went down. He was doing a book tour. He was in Eugene, you know, and I went down and did an interview with him. And I've met Pete Rose a couple times. I got to be honest with you. He's kind of a scumbag. He is. He's just kind of scummy. There's an air about Pete Rose and an energy to him where you just kind of know he does things other people don't do because decent people wouldn't do.
Yeah.
But even when I went to interview him, he was sitting on a bar stool in a bar, and he's just kind of got this air of, he's got alcohol coming out his pores. It's just he's just kind of dirty that way. Yeah. John's in Tiger. John, welcome to the conversation.
Hey, so So, John, and I guess the other sports have already kind of opened the gates, but I think you made a comment about the, like, if you're a professional sports player and you're betting on stuff and you get in debt to a bookie, can they influence you to lean their way and to throw a game because you're in debt? And I think that's where you run into that liability of the...
True.
Should they be able to? Sure. But then you get into this, but who can get outside influence on you to throw something to take care of a major gambling debt that you don't have the means to take care of? And that's, I think, why, in some instances, they at least used to have the guidelines.
Yeah, I think the big issue there is you become vulnerable to influence, as the caller is pointing out. But I remember there were cases of athletes who served bans for having a gambling partnership. You know, there were some NFL players, including Alex Karras, who made appearances on behalf of a Las Vegas casino, and they got banned for a year. Certainly, there were point-shaving instances, but I think the caller is making a good point in that if Shohei Ohtani is wagering on college football with a bookie, and that bookie says, you're upside down by $4.5 million, but I'll tell you what, you only need to pay me $4 million, but I need to know that you go 0 for 4 in your next game, and I need to know that you make at least one error in your next game, and suddenly you've got a problem where somebody's compromised. I think, you know, that's a valid concern, but so if you're going to do that, like, you know, the NFL has that issue with players being allowed to wager on college football or other sporting events. But I don't know. I want to believe Ohtani's a decent guy because I still want to believe that decent people exist in sports. But I'll be honest with you. I graduate college. I go off to become a journalist. Wasn't that many years before I was covering the San Francisco Giants. That was a team I grew up rooting for. And when I was in college, I had a poster in my locker, in the locker room, of Barry Bonds on the inside of my locker. And here I was, standing at the foot of Barry Bonds' own locker, years later, waiting to interview him, and looking around the clubhouse, talking to different Giants on that team in that year, Jeff Kent, Rod Beck, Glenn Allen Hill, Barry Bonds. And I realized pretty quickly that these guys were, you know, some of them were idiots. Some of them weren't nice. Some of them were philanderers. Some of them were...
Philanderers?
That's a nice way to put it. They were philandering right outside the locker room, in fact. But then you learn it. You learn it in covering the Trailblazers. I'm going to be honest with you. A lot of those Blazers from the era of, like, 2003 to maybe like the Brandon Roy era of Blazers basketball, kind of a decade in there, Steven, that you probably were a diehard fan. Some of those guys had wives and families down one hallway and not their wife down another hallway waiting for them after the game.
Jeez.
And you lose respect for some of the athletes, and it wasn't Portland alone. It was going on everywhere.
I actually know from experience, there was a girl that we knew, me and my wife, that, she was there for one of the players in the girlfriend section.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Well, I was outside the Blazers.
So there was the wife section, and then there was the girlfriend section?
Yeah, there's
definitely... And sometimes a player had a wife and a girlfriend at a game?
Or two girlfriends at the game.
There's definitely separate sections. Yeah.
I'll tell you a story. I know a story where a player, NFL player, because here's the scene in the locker room before the game. Before the game in the locker room, NBA players, NFL players are talking to the team representatives, and they're going, hey, I need two tickets, because they got a text from somebody.
Right.
And they'll be like, okay, what name do I leave them under? Will call?
Okay.
So I've seen this happen on more than one occasion, but I can tell you what happened with a San Francisco 49ers quarterback, okay?
Okay.
That I was covering.
Wow, okay.
He had his girlfriend at the game.
Uh-huh.
And then said to the team rep, I need two more tickets, and he was leaving two other tickets for another girl that was not a girlfriend but was a girlfriend. Unfortunately, the team rep put the two women and the four tickets side by side.
Oh, no.
Yes, and then later, it cost him the relationship. one of the relationships it cost him, and he said to me, how dumb do you have to be to put those four tickets together when I'm asking you for two things? He was mad about it. I also saw it in a Blazers locker room where I saw a Blazers player who is a beloved player say, I need four tickets, two in this side of the arena and two on that side of the arena. And everybody knew what they were talking about.
Shady.
It seems really complicated to have two relationships like that. Like,
yeah. Well, there's 18,000 people in the arena, Stephen.
I mean, it's not even worth it, though. Like, it's so, just too hard for me. I could never cheat because it's too hard for me.
Yeah. Just the
Stephen's too lazy to
the multitasking alone would just be overwhelming for you, Stephen.
I could do it.
Stephen's like, I can only handle one of these things at a time. But it's, I've watched it over and over and over again. And so, back to Ohtani.
Yeah.
I want to believe that Shohei Ohtani is as advertised. And there's some deep psychology about this.
Yeah.
Like, I still, as somebody who is jaded, who has been in these locker rooms, who has seen this stuff, I still want to believe there are good guys out there.
Well, he just might be a good guy who has a gambling problem.
What does that say about
Yeah, what are you saying? Gambling problem doesn't mean anything.
He's a degenerate gambler. Then none of it's real.
It's my new favorite player.
All right. All right, coming up, we'll play some Punch It audio later in the show. Anna's got the 5 at 5. She's been working on it all this time at Killer Burger. She's been hard at work. She's also networking in the room. We got a lot of people who have stopped by to say hello. I want you to do that. I have two pairs of Mariners tickets to give away. We're going to give them away later this hour. You need to be here to have a chance to win them. But I want you to stop by the Killer Burger in West Lynn. We're in the Safeway parking lot, also known as Cascade Summit. If you are nearby, swing by, grab a burger, grab a beer. In the next segment, I'll tell you how you can possibly win those Mariners tickets, but you got to be present to win.
We interrupt this broadcast with a special announcement from the Bald Face.
Hey, sorry to interrupt the podcast, but if you want to listen to more of the Bald Face Truth Radio Show, including more of this segment that you're listening to, make sure you subscribe on SoundCloud and iTunes to the Bald Face Truth Radio Show. Thanks for listening.